It's Dr. Tennant's Verbal Highs. Let's start the show with Lewis Tennant. Here we go. Guests and interviews that you're looking for, with creators, innovators, and so much more. For all episodes and further info, verbalhighs.com is the place to go.
All right, welcome to Dr. Tennant's Verbal Highs, a podcast podcasted weekly from a kitchen bitch in Kingsland, Auckland, Aotearoa, New Zealand. My name's Lewis and I'm the host of the show, and I promised I'd get a second episode up this week to catch on up, trying to get 50 out in a year. Had my 2-week break, don't know what's happening next week. You want to come on and talk? You want to come on and talk about stuff? Get in contact, verbalhighs@gmail.com. Managed to find, we'll look for someone next week. Oh, don't look forward. Live in the now, Lewis, live in the now. Holding the pod microphone like an ice cream. Had to pack it down. Had people over for dinner. Can't have the space station podcast hanging over the dishes. Can't have lamb roast getting in the mic. My guest today is Mr. Bobby Brazuca, Sao Paulo-born unofficial Brazilian music and culture ambassador for New Zealand. Great chat, man. Bobby's a lovely guy, and we actually went quite deep. A lot of them end up being bio pieces, but we end up going quite deep, talking sort of social issues and so on, particularly around immigration. Bobby's thoughts on that. I guess being an immigrant. Oh, I'm an immigrant as well. Being a more recent immigrant. I don't think I sparked that off. We just ended up chatting about it. It was really interesting, talking about politics in a very accessible and interesting way. Actually, it seems like a while ago I chatted to Bobby. I've got a list here of, I have to make keywords for the website. So I've got Fatherhood, Brazil, Gathering, Sandy Bay, Pauli Fuamana, Suani, Conch Records, How Bizarre, TVNZ World Cup, Jack Tane, Jacinda Ardern, Avondale, Catch a Fire, Immigration, Rio 2016, The Black Seeds, and PSC. So there you go. There's some keywords that come up in the episode. Just been fishing on the Coromandel for the first time instead of Kawai. I caught some snapper off the beach, which was pretty exciting. They're in the fridge. Haven't been eaten yet. We'll be eating shortly. I'll get out of your way. If you would subscribe to the show. You can do that on iTunes. Just search out Verbal Highs or Dr. Tennant's Verbal Highs. Please like the show on Facebook at Verbal Highs Podcast, at Verbal Highs on Twitter. Or you can go to the regular old website and check on in verbalhighs.com. This feels like a pointless rant at the beginning. There you go. It's 2.5 minutes of pointless rant, followed by a brilliant conversation with Bobby, who is having his birthday at Ponsonby Social Club, if you're in Auckland, with now-crowned New Zealand-based world DMC champion DJ Spell. Check out DJ Spell on Facebook if you want to be entertained, by the way. Ooh-wee. So much more than a DJ. Ladies and gentlemen, Bobby Brazuca.
Verbal high, straight down from up above.
So 9 months today for your baby daughter, is that right?
Yeah, today.
How's that feel?
That was awesome. Yeah, good feeling. Yeah. Loving it. Love being a dad. It's the best thing happened to me, really. I was born for that, I think. Born to be a dad. Loving it. Every day is better than the last, you know?
Yeah.
It's quite a choice. It's quite a I didn't know any love before that, and just fun, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm really kind of like to give to people, you know, as my day, everyday thing, and give it to my one of my own. Wasn't too hard.
Because some friends I've talked to are like they were totally into it and stuff. Like, I'm talking like male friends, but a couple of guys have been like, yeah, but I was just like, there was the emotional connection wasn't quite there. And then, like, as soon as the birth happens, it's like, oh, yeah. You just realize, like, oh my God, this is, I've done this.
Yeah,
you know, this is me.
When the coin drops, yeah. Like, in action.
Yeah.
I was kind of, my one was a bit of a surprise. You know, me and my partner were not together for like ages.
Yeah.
And we just kind of like, it was a bit of an accident, but a beautiful accident.
A happy accident.
Yeah, a happy accident. And then...
happy ending and a happy accident.
Yeah. Totally. And then... then just end up being cool, just fun, you know? Just kind of like when I actually... was born, and then I was like, oh my God, actually, this is, you know. And then when you actually start doing stuff, actually to look after and clean, and then also when and the months go by, and then they start kind of like giving back to you, because in the most of the beginning you're just kind of giving love, giving, and then but then you start receiving it back.
They start to that's right. I know what you mean. You go from sort of like completely oblivious to like someone who's another sentient being.
And then she looks at you,
understand what's going on.
Yeah, she looks at you and then she smiles at you, and then after that's when you even get more and more, like your heart start feeling more, like, you know. And then when you come from work and she hasn't seen me for a while, and then she sees me and goes cranking, laughing, and gets really happy. That's another level, you know. Then with cuddles and stuff, that's pretty cool.
And then you're living in the hood, so people are stealing nappy bags out of you, so you're dealing with that. What's happening on the corner? When you posted that, I was like, does he mean bags full of dirty nappies? I hope he doesn't mean that.
No, you should see that. No, there's like a whole industry that I didn't, you know, there's a whole world out there when you don't have, like, I didn't know about it. You know what I mean? I didn't know about, like, lots of stuff there, like all the creams and all the stuff and how many, you know, all the processed things, like, such as, like, when you're going to give a bottle, when you're going to give, you know, like, everything goes on into.
And
just learning is such a learning process. But then the craziest industry that is there, you know, like, or the nappy bags are like, they flash ass.
Shit's expensive.
Yeah, they're expensive.
People have babies.
If you're gonna get one, it's like 120 bucks in the shop, man. It's like gonna be. And then the girls don't want just any nappy bag, you know. So you know, when I lost the second nappy bag, my girl's like, "Oh, cool, we're gonna go to like Silver Park to get." I was like, "Why do we have to go to Silver Park to get, like, you know, like a nappy bag?" And then realized there's like a whole lot of nappy bag, leather one, and blah, 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 and they come with like compartments, and then there's a like there's everything. I think for the bottle, I think for the nappy.
We'll get to politics later on, but we live in New Zealand at the moment, where you gotta hide your nappy bag in the car.
Yeah, and then that's
some contraband there.
Yeah, that's my my driveway, which is kind of weird. Someone broke it twice.
The other weird one I spotted, and I had to come home and ask some friends who have kids, is like, you know how they lock up the baby formula? Have you noticed they lock up the baby formula at some supermarkets?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I noticed that. It's a kind of, I have like a detector, kind of a, like a something that is like a little, I noticed in Brazil.
But why do they lock up the baby formula? Because I just realized I was about to say to you, I said, no, but it's too big to steal. I heard it was because some people like bulk buy it, and there's a supply and demand thing. I didn't see
in New Zealand. I saw in Brazil.
No,
I saw when I was in Brazil.
So, no. The countdown just up there, bro. They've got, it's under lock and key. And there's like a sign up saying limited to however many per the baby record, eh?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Hope they don't make any meth out of baby formula these days.
Yeah. So you've seen it in Brazil, but it's here now, okay.
Yeah.
So what about that? I was thinking today, like, you know, have you got a settled baby, or is it like, are you getting the mad woken up in the middle of the night? And
She sleeps really good. She's like, she goes to sleep about 7:30 and wakes up at 7.
Okay. Because I was going to say, with the DJ life, it probably doesn't affect you as much as many people.
Yeah, well, I try to... we kind of got an organic process that we actually end up doing, looking after the baby. But Jez, my partner, she's quite reasonable and quite pretty lucky. She looks after pretty much takes the morning.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do the morning if she's kind of tired, because she also works in the music industry.
Yeah.
So sometimes she's just been doing too much, and then I go over and take over in the morning for a little bit. And I find it kind of be hard in the winter to get up quite early.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
It's been the coldest winter since I've lived back here, bro.
Really cold, eh?
It feels like it's been like Wellington mornings. Because that's where I'm from. It's been like cold the last few weeks. But you got me thinking, a lot of my friends who are like, well, a lot of us are like this these days, like projects, creative stuff, da 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 da. It's almost a better style of parenting, because it's not like you disappear at 7:30 in the morning, get on the road, come back at 6, real tired, go to bed, da 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 da.
I do daddy daycare like a couple of days, like Wednesday, Thursday. I'd look after the baby myself.
Yeah,
it's kind of a modern thing as well these days, you know, because there's more people working from home.
Yeah,
there's more people work. So I do work from home. I do one day in an office from Possibly Social Club, and then I just use the office for everything, for my music stuff or all my admin stuff. Anyhow, but I do Wednesday, Thursdays, and then it's just then I'm mostly at home, and then it just kind of do it. But it's quite hard, you know. Actually, I feel like I try to
I don't think anyone ever said a newborn baby was easy, bro.
I don't think you're the first one to say it's quite hard to kind of juggle, yeah. you know, like juggle. Like even if you just come home, you're still at home and you got the baby, like sometimes a day, and then you just, when I go DJing, then it's kind of instant money, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
While like if I'm trying to work on music, then it's just impossible because you can't stop.
You mean trying to produce beats at home?
Yeah, I just kind of co-produce, but just put it to ideas together.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of like, you just can't stop and, you know, you just don't get the motivation because you got to do the washing or you got to make a feed or got to, like, you know, things go like that.
So shall we give her a name? I wonder how I pronounce this right. It's Aoki. Have I pronounced it right?
No, Aiko.
Aiko. Oh,
Aiko. Yeah.
I was like, sort of writing today, I'm going, I'm either going to mess this up. Anyway, bro, congratulations.
Thank you.
It's lovely news. And you know, when you're that age, 9 months is a birthday, you know?
Yeah. It's every time as a milestone, right? So apparently you have to take a photo every, on Facebook world. They said they got to take a photo like 3 months, 6 months, 9 months and just do it. And so I just follow up.
That's crazy. I reckon there's two sides to that, man. Like I was thinking about this because I went to the Head Like a Hole doco last night and heaps of it's like I liked all of it, but I really loved because my kind of era of teenage coming into adulthood is 90s in Wellington. And so there was bits of footage of then and, you know, remembering where the shops were and, you know, all that stuff people looked and da-da-da. And so I was like, it's almost cool how back then there's only a little bit of all of that. And so all of that footage is really golden.
Yeah.
And then I thought about my childhood and I was like, you know, I don't know however many, but it's like I've got 16 photos of when I was between I was zero and, and you know, kids these days, they got
their own
there's
page.
There's a folder of 7,000 for and every, then, you know.
Some of my friends have their own page. Like the babies, like, and I was like going, I think there's a little bit too much, but then kind of in a way... It's each to your own, and then people just wanted to have, you know, might as well, like, I just made up a hashtag.
it is each to your own, and I've read different things about it, and I think that, like, if you're not, you know, if you're not going to compromise that person in any way in their later life, which any sensible parent wouldn't, then do what you want. Be proud of whatever it is.
Yeah.
I should probably introduce you.
I find that sometimes that maybe I take too many photos and stuff, but then it's just like your heart's so full of happiness, they just go like, and then I want to show the world.
I think another thing is different, getting me thinking about all sorts of things now is, man, I'd definitely be backing up to three places because that's the other thing with those physical photos is I've got some of them in a box up there, but you don't want to lose a hard drive, you know, so I hope you got those in three places.
I just thought maybe I got one in two places, one and a half.
in the cloud.
Yeah.
So my guest today is Dad, DJ, radio host, New Zealand Music Award nominee, unofficial Brazilian music and culture ambassador to New Zealand, Mr. Bobby Brazuca.
Yo.
Hey. So when I first met you, I just got back to New Zealand. I lived overseas a few years, and I met you. You were the kind of the front man at Conch, the head coffee honcho. And I thought that you were, like, new to New Zealand. I didn't realize that you went to high school here and so on. So, born in Brazil or born in New Zealand? What's the story for the childhood buzz?
I was born in São Paulo, and I came here in my last year of high school as an exchange program. And I went to Avondale College.
Yeah. And met Pyatt and all those boys.
Those are my boys, like my best mates, especially Pyatt and Polly Who and AG Bro, all those guys from Base FM.
Pete's a great man.
he's real lovely. He's truly my, like, you know, my brother. Like, I would spend Christmas with them and him and his family every year.
Yeah.
They're being really the reason I came back. So, because I stayed 1 year and then I met those guys and pretty much they made me fall in love in New Zealand, really. You know, they're the reason I kind of really, really loved this place in the first place in 1997. So I stayed the whole year. I had a real great time. I was just like, wow. I was kind of like Fizz from the 70s show. Remember that? The South American exchange student?
Oh, no.
I was like somewhere. I had a bit more game than Fizz. But anyhow.
Good for talking to girls, Bobby. Yeah. Being a little different.
Just do a bit of accent. Yeah. Yeah, then I loved it here, man. I was just like, man, I love this place. And I was just kind of like, I was really great. We had a such, you know, exchange student. You just live in, also Ozizi those times, you know, you just kind of like, you just get money from Brazil coming up.
Yeah.
And I was, didn't have to do much in school, high school, really. And
Are you saying high school is a bit more relaxed than...
Because I already finished high school in Brazil.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So it's sort of like another, a gap year?
Yeah, it was a gap year. And then I just kind of like, man, I was just kind of hanging out, really. Yeah. Just having fun. And then I finished... that year, 97, and I came back to Brazil, got into university, you know, but I came back around in 2000, end of 99.
Finished uni?
Finished, semi-finished.
What'd you
did travel and tourism.
Yeah, right.
It was dumb. Like,
hey, man, you ended up making coffee at college. That's that degree there.
Well, I did actually end up going and washing dishes at Santos first when I came back. So 99, 2000, we came back, and I came back just to visit. We had all like... Went to the gathering 99-2000. Yeah. I guess you're probably there.
That was the rainy one.
The rainy one.
The only reason I survived that is I had a friend with a pretty well-to-do family who had a tent that was more like, you could stand up in it.
Ah, yeah.
And it was lots of space. And so we sort of had a safe place to go. But, man, if I'd been in one of those little pup tents, I would have been out of there.
I think there was the position where me and Pyatt actually were sharing a tent. And we put it in a place that... end up being dry, but it was an incredible experience. It was the first to see someone LRW live. Remember then we did a little tour around. We had a van or the whole Sandy Bay crew. We kind of crossed Arthur Pass all the way to Hokianga or something.
You're like me. It was the round the gathering that I really discovered all around there and Motueka.
Nelson,
Arthur's Pass or something, whatever it's called, I might have that wrong.
So beautiful. And then I think we went to the Miranda. Is that where you go to the Miranda?
Hot Springs?
The Miranda is Coromandel. The Hot Spring.
Hamner.
Something like that. We went over there. We did a good, real cool. We're just young and, we're in our 20s or something. Yeah. But then, yeah, it's been those. Then the year turned to 2000, and 2000 I decided to stay. I just called my parents and my mom, I'm staying. I'm gonna got a job here at this cafe, Santos.
How'd they feel? It's a big move, man.
My parents are lawyers, they were pretty much, but they were they never really been too much. Not that kind of like. They're always happy from whatever I want to be happy.
Supportive, that's good.
They're like, oh, you want to be there? That's cool. And so I decided to stay and start working, which was really changed my life because I start working at Santos, which is the place to be, really, Ponsonby Road.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I went and watched a few World Cup games.
I know. That's another chapter also that really changed everything for me.
Yeah.
The World Cup 2002. But then... I met heaps of people like there, like all the music people, and this used to be the place for all the film crew, musicians, artists, or each, you know, it possibly was so different those days, you know.
Those days, so even that recently, it's like, you reckon it's really changed?
Ah, changed there. I know that street really well now. I've been there for, so we're closer to, been there for 17 years.
Yeah.
So
you got the long room right next door to what you're talking about now, you know? So that's a sign of the change, right?
It was
would have been Safari Lounge when you were there.
Yeah. It was just more like organic. I don't know. It was more like kind of like rootsy. You know, it was more like cafes or more like, you know.
I know exactly what you're saying.
You know, life is just changing.
Everything you just described,
Yeah, you know, there was the times just say we have like bacon and eggs, and nowadays you have all the
Nike hats and the expensive prams and the...
And then all that kind of like... And then also Safari Lounge was like, we had a Wednesday nights. Just Levi's to run in the hip-hop.
I think it might have been Buddha Bar before that, something like that.
The Chill Bar. Yeah.
Hey, we're going off track. What was I asking you? Just about... Turning up on up over here, so you move on over. Are you like buying music and stuff around the stage in terms of thinking about DJing, or you already been DJing, or did that come later?
No, so around that time also like really changed. What really changed to me was this is a cool story. Like I was carrying these dishes. I was the dishwasher there, and then I dropped all these dishes in front of three Polynesian guys sitting down on the table, and. That was Carlos with the K, Soani, and Polly Fumaina, is that how I say it? From OMC?
Fumaina?
Fumaina, yeah.
Yeah.
they were, "Are you okay, little guy?" And then I was like, "Oh, I'm all right." They helped me out. So I was like, "Oh, man, I look after those cats. Those cats are cool, you know?" Like, and each of them actually had influenced me in some way. Like, Paulie became kind of a little bit friends with him. And then he took me to his house once because we're talking about Brazilian music. And then he showed me all these records.
Yeah.
And he had some Brazilian records as well. Right. And then Suani, of course, I used to see him DJing, and she'd be like, "Man, this," and he was also the smiley bit of Moses.
Shit, Bobby, there's not a lot of people left on that list. No, I just realized.
The three passed away, and Carlos of the K was
Carlos was the drummer for the percussionist. I lived here in 99 for 1 year, and he was such a lovely, charismatic guy. I didn't have a great year here in 99.
Yeah.
But he's someone when I came back, I said to a few people, "Where's Carlos?" It's like, I hate to tell you.
Yeah, he was at the time, he actually told me a lot of stuff. I stopped buying records at Concho, and Concho was a store in Altair Square.
Yeah.
And then he's the one that distributed. I was too shy to kind of, at the same time, I was financing my turntables from DMC down there. You know what I mean? Like, and I just stopped buying my stuff and wanted to kind of get into DJ more. And Carlos was like, "Nah, you're good. Come start playing with me." So Carlos started putting me into the scene. I'll DJ and he played percussion. The three guys passed away, but they're kind of being people that kind of got me into the music, really, really New Zealand music too, actually, you know. And then I was just loving. I really like, because one day I saw Simon Gregg, and Simon Gregg was telling me like that he follows. Well, he met me as a dishwasher like at those days, and then he just likes how I build it up to what I've done so far.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And then I told this story, and then he's like, "Man, the cool thing is that you were in the right place in the right time." You know, like, I saw Fat Freddy's at Sapphire Lounge. I saw Fat Freddy's doing three nights at the Lee Sawmill.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was here for the whole...
when it was all bubbling up.
Yeah, it was the Shea Fu. It was like someone else. It was like the whole Wellington scene, or the Wellington musicians start popping up. And then I was living there, you know?
Yeah.
Which is like...
So you hear Paulie, you got close enough that he took you to his house. I'd imagine he wasn't in the best part of his career. Then have you read the book Simon wrote?
No.
Oh, you got to read
the book. I saw the documentary, part of it, actually, on the plane.
On the Māori, I also one on Māori TV. I thought was pretty good. Yeah, about how he was doing visual art and stuff as well, which I never knew.
I was a little bit of a history. I was on a New Zealand flight.
Yeah.
Impressions
of him.
He was just quite flamboyant, like you know, like kind of like also young. There was also I kind of didn't know. I kind of couldn't figure out like why he was taking me there and talk to me, like, you know what I mean? Why is he giving me the time? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought it was just pretty cool. And then Carlos was also was someone. Then I kind of link up to this story another day, because Carlos, when I used to hang out with him, he used to be kind of like say goodbye to every bartender, and when you get out of a club, he stopped to say going up Queen Street, he stopped to talk to all the buskers and stuff. And I'm like, why is stop to, you know? And he's like, just give your time to people. Time is more, you know, money is nothing but like time, you know, just,
yeah.
And that's pretty much what I felt that maybe Paulie was doing. I'm not sure, like, you know, but then, yeah, that was pretty cool. I was just really stoked that, you know, Simon Gregg was saying that about someone such a level of, you know, of, you know, knowledge of New Zealand and such an infiltrated.
Well, you know, so you know, Simon wrote the book on Paulie, right?
Yeah.
So I picked that up, and I probably finished that in 3 days. So you should get it from somewhere. And
what's the name of it?
Oh no,
I'll find out.
How Bizarre! It's called How Bizarre.
I think they did
it's like how bizarre that this PI fella from New Zealand had this worldwide smash. How bizarre everything that happened. How bizarre, da da da. So
yeah,
good title.
Wow.
Have your folks ever... They must have come out here by now.
Oh, yeah, quite a few times.
Quite often.
Yeah, I'm quite...
Long-distance grandparents.
I'm quite, like, tight with my family. And my dad's Japanese. Brazilian-Japanese. And my mom is Brazilian. And my mom's got, like, kind of full-on Catholic. You know, like, eight brothers and sisters. So she's the oldest of nine.
It's pretty common. There's a pretty huge statue hanging over that city.
Biggest Catholic nation in the world.
So your dad, I wonder about the Japanese thing. So your dad is Brazilian Japanese. So his grandparents were
Japanese.
One to a Japanese, a Brazilian. And how did they meet? It's not, I mean, these days it's very common, well, but
no. So you know. in the years, beginning of the century, the Japanese, like, you know, the slavery finished. So the So then the Japanese went over, the Italians went over, like Brazil was just kind of like what happened when the Lebanese and the Greeks went to Australia or the Croatians came to New Zealand. No, there was land of opportunities, you know, like, so they need labor, and the Italians went, the Germans went, they built up Brazil, you know, like they, and a lot of Japanese went as well. So also the Japanese, the biggest concentration of Japanese out of Japan is Brazil. But they don't go anymore. They're finished. They stopped the kind of immigration kind of end up around after the Second World War, probably like 1940.
So from your like dad's generation onwards, I guess you're saying that ethnic combination isn't as uncommon as you think. Japanese Brazilian heritage.
There is more. Yeah. So there is, like, for example, in the beginning of it, the Japanese, everybody says, oh, you know, like when they talk about it in 2008. There was the 100 years celebration of the Japanese immigration to Brazil. It started in 1908.
Yeah.
And then in the beginning, they read books and stuff and talk about how the Japanese were actually buzzing out, like, when they first came, because they're looking into, like, Brazil, you know, the high ceilings, you know, the Portuguese colonial style of building.
Yeah.
High ceilings and toilet bowls, you know, like, you know, and bunk beds, and, you know, because they always should sleep in the floor and pool in the ground, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And then the Brazilians were buzzing out on the Japanese because all they want to do is work, and, you know, and just there was a soul in the whole way that they were. And the Japanese were a mix. They were a mix to Brazilians for a long time.
The Japanese are famous for that as a race, though, a lot of the time,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
yeah.
They would have a lot of the Asians, like, try to keep up. You know, like, now the world's kind of being more open minded about everything. But those days were more like, they were in Brazil and they couldn't, you know. So my dad was kind of like, my dad converted himself from Buddhism to Catholicism to marry my mom.
Yeah.
Because and then my mom to make, because my Japanese grandparents were so kind of like disgusted, like, that my dad was going to marry a Brazilian woman. And my aunties as well, they were like, my dad's sisters were like, ah, what are you doing? And
I always find all this stuff so weird. Yeah. All the attitude, eh? Yeah.
Yeah, but they, you know, those days, like, yeah, you know, that was probably the
60s. Still now, you know, you'd be surprised, yeah.
And then she started learning how to make Japanese food and stuff. But my Japanese aunties, the three sisters of my dad moved to Rio. And all my cousins, they all married to Brazilian people.
Yeah.
So they paid, you know, yeah, they got
yeah.
But yeah, I love
it's not going back now. We're not going back.
Yeah, yeah, I love that mix. You know, I love being
you spent much time in Japan?
I only went once.
I've been once as well. What an amazing place.
Yeah, it was cool.
That's a culture that I think would take many more visits to properly figure out. Mm. It's very different. Very different.
Yeah.
Even just landing back in Auckland, it was like, oh
yeah.
Very, you know.
I was there for only 5 days, but then I was pretty buzzy. I did a big trip.
Did you feel any part of you feel like you were home?
they'll try to speak to me sometimes, because they can. It's weird about Asians, because, you know, sometimes I can figure out Japanese more for the clothes,
yeah,
the gears, because they got, like, really kind of like a bit more, not being, you know, they're a bit more stylish than kind of other Asians sometimes. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, yeah, when I see in the street, like,
oh yeah, there's visually amazing. Yeah,
yeah. And then but then they can see it in your face that you're more, you know. And also they try to speak to me and I'm like, nah, they speak Japanese.
Get out your app.
Yeah. That was, yeah. So, yeah, but I love being that half-half. And now I have a Brazilian-Japanese Kiwi baby. That's pretty good.
Well, you know, that's the way the world's going, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was meaning about those attitudes of the past. It's a funny thing.
There was...
So, like, I mean, I'm going to get there one day, Bobby. I am. Sao Paulo compared to Auckland, I mean, when you go back and so on, how do you describe that city, you know?
I always find that, like, what takes the most of me is the density. Does it make sense? Like,
yeah, totally.
It's just so much.
This is not, even Sydney is faster than Auckland, let alone Tokyo or Sao Paulo,
London. Yeah. Like, but then Sao Paulo is just like, it's just like, there's a guy, you know, like, sometimes if there's a guy coming with this little carrying this with a horse and like carrying all this cardboard in the back because it's gonna sell. But at the same time, there's a Ferrari crossing path. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. And then there's a helicopter going through. But then there's all these buildings and it's like there's so much to see. Like sometimes you just go. I did some work for TVNZ in the World Cup and the Olympics. And then I'll take them in the middle of the favelas. And the favelas are like, you know, the slums. Yeah. I'm all like...
Up on the hills, right?
Well, man, it's just like, that's dense. Because it's just one house on top of the other. And then you just walk around and you're like, and there's a chicken. And then you've got to watch out for the dog poo. But then there's also a little kid running past. And you know what I mean? Then if you don't look properly, you might see a little kid carrying an M16. You know what I mean? Like,
but you grew up there, right? So it's not like...
But
your parents are lawyers, so you didn't grow up.
The social differences are quite big. Like so.
Yeah,
you for a guy like you know.
Well, you get gated. I'd imagine you'd get sort of gated communities as well, where if you don't want to deal with any of that shit,
yeah, you just kind of like
just live in that world.
Yeah,
like any of those cities.
Must be a little bit like someone that comes from, I guess, someone. It's not in the extreme of South Africa, I think, but then it's kind of like a lot of gates. Yeah. So a lot of like, you know, this is different than, you know, to go to the States or to Tokyo. Like in São Paulo is also that a lot of security, a lot of, you know, it's just, you feel part of it, you feel really unsafe and really get you out of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
You know?
That's funny you say that because a lot of places, like when I was in New Orleans, it's like, I don't go around that corner. Yeah. I'm pretty like, it's not that I look tasty or anything like that, but I just hold myself in a way where I don't generally get too freaked out like some people would.
Yeah.
But yeah. And like, I don't know what I'm saying is I'd imagine you'd kind of be the same. Like
But when
you actually realize that,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? When you actually realize that, you go, fuck, this is actually somewhere quite dangerous.
Yeah.
If I feel that heat. Yeah.
I didn't feel that on parts that, because I think sometimes it's also how are you.
But that's how you present yourself towards the area,
and then if you're kind of like scared inside, you just kind of get them.
But it's not meaning. I'm not meaning like you're being a tough guy. You just hold yourself in a way where you're like you don't. Yeah, I guess it's like dog sense, right? But
like I did.
What'd you do for the World Cup, mate? Our chaperone, Portuguese translator.
Getting to linking up both stories is like, there was one time I got scared. I was like, Brazil just lost 7-1 to Germany. And I was working for doing chaperone, like, you know, kind of driving them around to TVNZ crew. It was me, a security guy, and a reporter. And it would be in the middle of São Paulo, right in downtown São Paulo, which is like, can be like quite, you know, quite like a Blade Runner kind of style. You know what I mean? Like a night, you know, and the Brazilians were like, just the sense was that everybody was sad. It was just kind of like, oh, like honestly, it was just so horrible. And also, and then just crossing the city a little bit with these guys and they're so white. You know, the secure guy was like Australian SRS, the army guy.
Secret Service or whatever. Yeah.
He was an ex- that guy, yeah. and the reporter was like also white dude, and it was me also there. I don't look that much of a Brazilian, and I just kind of had to look out to those guys. But then there was like fireworks going like not even to the sky or just going towards. Oh, it's kind of crazy. And there's all this noise and I just kind of want to get out of there real quick, and yeah. I just kind of wanted to go home because I was also really upset. But I did that.
You were upset not by the loss, but by what you're seeing the city doing.
Oh no, by the loss, really. but also, I was kind of scared of what was going on because the people were so upset. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I was just like, man, let's get out of here quick. And but I had the time of my life. I did. I DJed. There was two parallel jobs. I decided to go for 6 months in 2014 and live there. Just kind of like stay closer to my family. Like I wanted my nephews and nieces to kind of.
What year?
2014. Yeah, right. The World Cup.
I didn't realize you went back and lived there.
Yeah, I lived there for 6 months.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, just
Facebook. You could be posting from anywhere. Yeah, Avondale.
I did go Paulo. 2 months in last year for the Olympics, and also because it was a follow up of the job I did for the World Cup. I look after the guy Jack Tame. He was kind of a correspondent from New York. But then I would look after him for the first part of the World Cup. And then after this other reporter, Steve Marshall, came over.
Yeah.
So anyhow, I was just living there. And also a friend of mine got me to DJ, which is pretty cool. I was just like, I DJ for a few of the games, the opening.
Wow. Like, were they to those huge crowds?
No. It was like, so next to the stadium. And next to the stadium, there was... like a sponsors village.
Yeah.
So like Castrol had a big lounge, and then Adidas, and then Emirates, and then you know like all those people had like. So in the middle of it, there was a DJ booth, and that was me DJing. So it was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
DJ there, and then after the World Cup was just like insane. I hang out in the VIP area watching the games. So I just played in the interval, like beginning the start of the games, and then afterwards.
Yeah.
It was time of my life. Really, couldn't believe that I was there in the World Cup. Yeah.
So I'd imagine, but that will be something that if Bobby's around, that every time there's a. Oh, I suppose it's not going to be in Brazil again, though, is it? But do TVNZ still give you other? Is there other stuff around that?
So because they had the Olympics line up, Jack, which I became quite. Connect with a good friends of him. He got me the work to do the Olympics, which is that then I went for 2 months.
Yeah,
and I worked at the Paralympics as well.
Yeah,
and that was pretty. That was amazing.
Where were the Paralympics?
Right after they usually do.
No,
right.
Okay.
It was in Rio. Yeah, so Rio 2016, and then Paralympics 2016. Just they do it 2 weeks after. They was just using the same kind of infrastructure that they had for the Olympics.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. It was another great. I was just loving it. It was just amazing to be in that time of Brazil, you know, because we never did that. We had a World Cup in 1950, so God knows when we're going to have another World Cup. And then, you know.
You mean we, meaning back in Brazil?
Yeah, back in Brazil. So.
It's a country that will be top of the list for multiple ones, though, surely. So.
It's just now it's actually such like a bad state. It's actually in a real bad crisis. And
what's going on?
Political.
School me.
I thought
it was always a sort of tense.
Yeah, it's quite tense, but now, like, you know, it's just the violence is huge, you know, heaps of over, like the people don't have any work, and the corruption is in extreme, you know, like so big. And
it's an economic war, not a religious war or whatever.
No, the economical, political political crisis, really.
Yeah.
And then that's actually affecting the economy. But back in 2012, 13, kind of like, you know, that was when Brazil was booming, you know, they were kind of like, was getting to a good state. And then all these scandals, you know, this happening there about corruption and politicians getting go to jail and stuff. And, like, Rio is
just,
like,
just real, huge amounts of money.
Just bribing, like, any construction is just, like, is that they find out, for example, just an example of it, for example, you know, like the old mayor of Rio. He just made, before the Olympics, they said, Rio de Janeiro said, we are broke, we are bankrupt.
Yeah.
The host, you know, the state is bankrupt. And then now they just put in jail the governor of a few years back. And then he was just every single construction, he had a gang.
Yeah.
He's actually like, he had a gang. And he's like, every single construction was under here to get a bribe, you get paid for that. And then we're not talking about like, they were talking about millions. They were talking about asking if you want a coffee down the road, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was like, you go like, you just can't believe it. There's millions and millions of money. Like, you know, the people don't have the buses are like, you know, the public transport is terrible in Rio.
So infrastructure's breaking down and this guy's buying islands and jets.
Yeah, and then they find out that the whole family runs the whole public transport system.
Yeah.
And then the family will pay the governor.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's money to put the prices up because, you know, and
it's amazing. Crazy. It's everywhere. I listened to this podcast recently about one borough of New York.
Yeah.
I forget where it is, but it was like this long-term mayor of New York who was basically, it was a mafia town, and he was supposedly squeaky clean, but everyone there knew that, you know, you had to pay him off to get anything done anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, you wonder how much of it goes on, eh, man?
It's a funny
thing. They say New Zealand's corruption-free, but I wonder these days, eh?
Oh, I don't think so.
Because I wanted to ask you about that. Like, you're talking about the dude with the collection of cardboard on his ramshackle bike or whatever, and then the dude in the Ferrari. You seeing more of the gap here, Bobby, since you moved here?
Yes, heaps.
You been down Queen Street lately?
Yeah, I've seen heaps.
It's turning into almost like there's going to be tents up in a few months, man.
Yeah, like, you see, in Brazil, you see,
you know,
tents.
We're on the same page. I'm not hassling those guys. They're homeless. But it's like, I'm saying, why the hell, how is this happening on our main road?
Yeah.
How is it that you go walk down there and, you know?
So we go back to, like, you know, talk about, or kind of go back into the time, you know, like, when I was at Santos and all that, and then I realized there was no more like a rich kid from Brazil just having a fun time in New Zealand.
Yeah.
I was actually needed to live by, you know, At my times, you go. Me and Paulie and my bro, Edgy bro, we got a flat and Rose Road in Grey Lane, and then I used to pay $80 weekly rent. You know, at that time, $150 was a man. It was like you get a palace. You know, you get a real good. You know, and it was 2000. You know, and then but then that. I was actually realizing that, you know, I was an immigrant, you know. I was kind of, my granddad was from Japan to Brazil, you know.
Yeah.
I'm making my own history, you know what I mean? Saying that kind of like, but I was just like, I wanted to be here, and then I got my residency and stuff, and it's actually started to, you know, I had to work for my own, and then I can see the struggle and, you know, people like getting massive money because all my friends are getting to university here, and then getting thousands of money for
student loan,
yeah. And
not very good if you're like,
yeah, you know, and I watched everything kind of like it was Helen Clark on Power at that time, and then but it's more like I'm a little bit no offense against you know national or nothing, but then it's just more of my it's more of my people, like what I thought about is just looking after the people, like welfare here is, but. What I find comparing to Brazil is that New Zealand is so young, you know?
Yeah.
And I find that there's a cute, no naiveness about Kiwis. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Which is like, Brazilians are so, the people, the problem in Brazil is that the corrupt politician.
The shit runs deep.
Yeah, he's Brazilian. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The problem is the people.
Yeah.
You know, once you get to like stop bribing the cop when you stop over on the highway, and instead of they ask you for your document, you put $50
$50
and give it to. If you stop doing that because you're corrupting the system, you know what I mean? We grew up like that. We grew up to just that was normal for us.
Yeah.
You know,
you
gotta cut the queue. You just kind of like gotta be smarter than the other. It's just you know.
So even your folks as lawyers, those sort of people are like $50 for the traffic ticket.
Yeah, now but now they're changing. Now people just kind of like going, you know, you don't do that. You know, like this because you can't ask for the people to change because they were just getting opportunities to get these millions and millions of dollars, and they're just like, man, nobody's gonna bust me. Nobody can bust a politician. I'll just take it. You know.
Yeah.
But in New Zealand. But you know, the system, there's whole different, you know, for example, the welfare, like the dole in New Zealand is quite like, I find it quite bulletproof a little bit. Nowadays it's been like, kind of like probably was quite loose back in the day.
Yeah.
And I just find that it's just quite hard for anyone to kind of like try to, break that kind of, you know, the system.
Yeah.
Why in Brazil is quite new. You know, they're like having it's called Bolsa Família, which is the kind of like the law. And then they still figure out how not to kind of like take advantage of it, you know, like having more kids so you can have more welfare, more benefits, you know.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I just find it here, there's maybe like exchange of favors. It's not corruption, but like, it's not like people taking money. But I think that I just don't understand how there was a house crisis for 5 years. You know, it's been about 5 years, there's a house crisis going on. And now the prime minister was a banker, you know, and then how could I solve that?
I see what you're saying about the naivety thing. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
It's like, wake up and smell what's going on.
Yeah. You know, but then it's like going, hey, look, but maybe he's not selling, he's not getting money out of it, but he's making easier in exchange of favors or maybe that.
Well, you know, no, I'll tell you how I put it to some people. I'm so on the same page with you here. Like, so you say, out and out corruption, $50 in this, and people go, oh my God, it's like the mafia, da 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 da. Whereas here, it's just like something that it's always existed. But I reckon, maybe it's getting worse or more entrenched. Where at the end of the day, they all go to the same dinner parties.
Yeah.
They all socialize in the same circles.
Yeah.
They all have the same interests, which is power and money. They all have the means to exercise where that power and money goes. All their kids go through the same elite schools. All, you know, all the same people have the same phone numbers.
Yeah, and it's exactly like how they, like, when I first came in exchange, for example, was Avondale College. My friends, some of my friends would be from Avondale, would live in a, you know, in a house that was a bit more humble, say, but then I had other friends from Titirangi and then like a massive, you know, mansion.
Yeah.
And we all hang out.
Yeah.
Because it was a bit different for me to see that, because in Brazil, like, I would go to the same school or the people that go to the same neighborhood. There's like, is it social differences? The social difference grow quite a bit now. I find it quite like, you can see people more, you know, you can, and it's just great.
I think you're saying we're developing a class system here more so than when you moved here.
You know that triangle, remember that kind of like, pyramid kind of thing they grow we learn in high school. There's like the miserable, the middle class, you know, you can see.
Maybe. Oh, like the working class at the bottom. Or the,
So in Brazil, in Brazil, it's like the millionaires are like this little. Then there's the rich and the middle class rich, middle class poor, poor, miserable. You know, the miserable like, bah, real big. You know, so but in New Zealand's that, you know, people live in cars and, you know, then it's like there's child poverty. It's like, I mean, and then people blaming on, sometimes in immigration, and I don't know if that's the right thing. No, I guess there's places in New Zealand that there is work, you know, down south. It is a bit colder, it's a bit not attractive to live. But I guess I think that everybody has your interest in, and the world changed. You know, it's not just New Zealand. Like the world's kind of being a little bit more selfish.
Well, I was going to say, closing off what you said before, it's like, how we're a younger country, we're a really young country. And then the point I made to you, just to finish that off, is I was going to say is like, you know, somewhere like England where you just expect to rent all your life now because, you know, property ownership systems are hundreds of years old now. So those families hold on to that wealth. I think you got something there as well. Is like, you know, the longer we go on in the system, the more that those wealthy families own more and more and it becomes harder and harder for everyone else to get up on that ladder. So unless you break that system somehow, which is, I guess, a whole lot of political talk, it's like it's going to keep happening.
Which I find that can come, you know, at least sometimes the immigrants are like, kind of like, you know, for example, I'm also figured when I had a baby, I see that a lot of doctors are more like, there's a lot of Chinese, you know, Kiwi Chinese, Kiwi Indians. They come from...
I went to school with all of them. That's the generation whose parents were immigrants and worked at dairies and fruit shops.
And I was just thinking it's exactly like in Brazil, you know, like the old Brazilian Japanese people are like dentists, doctors.
Yeah.
My dad is a bit of an exception. He's a lawyer. But then, you know, like our grandparents just work so hard to kind of like give them, said, I know what the world, you know, how the rush is out there, like I don't know the competition. Yeah. So like, I don't want you to have this future. I'm going to work so hard for you to get a better future. And they become, you know, they study so hard and they become, you know, they're amazing. So I guess immigration is just good for
and I think that side of what you said just brings something else up. I don't think you can blanket say, oh, rich, successful people are the worst, because that's wrong as well. There's the people who work bloody hard and go through that. Yeah.
I mean, you know, just, it's not blaming, I just think that if you get there, then you gotta take your people with you.
It's abusing situations of status or power or whatever.
Yeah, you know what I mean. And just being really just me, kind of. It's not good.
I think you and I should start a political party. I'm thinking.
Yeah, we started Bobby Lewis.
Because I had a look online today, and I just realized how often you are quite politically active in your posting, which is great, man. Which brings me to how do you know Jacinda? Because she was in your house holding your baby.
She's my partner is good friends of real good friends of Clark Gayford,
who's her partner.
He didn't come to visit ICO for like we. She came, and it was pretty amazing. Like, opened the door. I just put it together now because for me it was just Jacinda, like our friend, kind of, and then. But now it's like, there's a chance for her to be the prime minister.
Yeah, and she's not coming over to your house for.
Yeah, and then I open the door and I was like, hi, you know what I mean? And then I'm like.
You know what would be funny? Yeah. You know what would be funny with, like, if you're talking to people back home about it?
Yeah.
And be like, damn, Bobby, how small is that country? Is there like 45 of you and you're hanging out with the prime minister?
Oh, it's just like, you know, it's pretty. I had the chance to meet, you know, people like that, you know, in my lifetime. And then there's someone that I had a quick talk once. He probably never remember that, but I was. That was Bob Harvey.
Yeah.
You know, he was the mayor of Waitakere.
Yeah.
He's was an amazing guy. Really, like, proper kind of, you know, kind of the kind of politician that actually you can feel they just want to look after people. Kind
Yeah.
And then he's Catholic as well. And then I was like, when I grew up, you know, like, sometimes I kind of like, you know, I understand. I don't truly believe in the Catholic Church and all that. But I mean, I read, you know, I went to Catholic school for my part of my life. And I just took some of the parts that just made me a better man, kind of thing, you know? Yeah. And then And then he said something about like to love and to serve, and then I kind of got that, and I was like, and I really like that. It's like, I'm not here for myself. I'm here for the others. I'm here to look after. You know what I mean? Like, I'm here to serve and to love. And he was pretty cool. That's how I kind of like take politics. You know what I mean? Like, I also want to make money. You know, I also want to have a batch. I also want to have like a real good future for my yeah. daughter. I also yeah. like, you know, I want to live comfortably. I want to yeah. still travel.
Yeah.
But there is a space for me to keep up, you know, and there's more.
You want to keep talking to the buskers on Queen Street.
Yeah, and I also want people to own yeah. everybody to get the same privilege in the same.
I think you
know
and
what
I have got pretty similar outlooks on how yeah. everything works, man.
You know what I mean? Like,
so it's Jacinda. She comes over. She has a coffee. Is she at the kitchen bench? Like, oh man, it's all so full on at the moment. I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
I don't know, Bobby. What do you reckon, Bobby? Give me some advice here.
I felt that I had a. I couldn't. They wanted to come over, like her and Clark Gifford want to come over. Because I put a post about, I've been really hard onto this immigration thing, because I read the policies and the Green Party policy for immigration, and I don't agree with it. Like, I find it kind of like, we don't have a crisis on immigration. It's just because the whole world's talking about it.
What's Green's policy?
I can't remember much. It's about cutting
capping immigration.
Yeah, capping a little bit, but it's just like there's need of a lot of stuff the Kiwis don't want to do, you know. Like down south, if you go to Queenstown, that's another part we're talking about, the community, my Brazilian community. Like, I do heaps for the community, you know. Like, I mean, I'm like known, you know, not being modest or anything, but like, you know, being, because of my work that I do.
Someone who's on the ground here.
Yeah, I spread the culture. I spread my culture through music, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm real, like, you know, dress the shirt, you know, carry the flag of Brazil kind of thing, or Latin culture, you know. Like,
yeah.
And then I see people, like, I've seen so many beautiful stories of people that just came over with nothing, you know, and just... And they were just happy to be in the Kiwi citizens and give a passport and just have a chance for that, you know, and having kids and families, and just, it's so cool. It's just so awesome when they post photos, and like, we grew up here. We're just being, you know, it's been 18 years there, being 18 years old together. And then there's some friends that just all have kids and Kiwi Brazilian kids. And, you know, and then there's so much, like, you go to Queenstown and it's like
there's still a lot of space as well.
Yeah, you know, you go to Christchurch, and Brazilians rebuilding Christchurch, you know.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, I don't think it's because they're looking to, they felt that maybe the immigration is the case of the housing crisis, is the cause of the housing yeah. crisis. But then I don't think it is. I think this just open up the legs too wide open to, like, you know, to
yeah.
a group, maybe, you know, to say the Chinese or, I don't know, so who there was that came up and they didn't have any visas or something, just buying. And yeah. it's like, I mean, this make it, could be like a bill that say, hey, look, let's look up for first buyers, you know, families first, and yeah. then you can buy a second. You know, I don't know how. There's the thing about politics. I don't think that I'm intelligent. Like, I think
you're making
sometimes.
Perfect sense with everything yeah. so far.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm no political expert. I just chat to people about it on the podcast if it comes up. But I think what you're saying about immigration, yeah, I think even though, you know, I think people throw around things like, you say, oh, you're racist or whatever. But I do think sometimes that capping immigration thing is, even though that person might not be like overtly racist, I think there's a, if I can take it down a level, just to try and be in their camp.
Like a,
even though they probably wouldn't admit it, a fear of change,
yeah.
a fear of the country becoming something different.
Yeah.
Whereas I sort of see it like the more places you go that are international cities, the greater the culture becomes.
Yeah.
I'd love it if we had something here like, I've thought about this a few times, like a, like every nation version of Notting Hill,
yeah.
so not just the
yeah.
not just the West Indians,
yeah.
Caribbean culture,
yeah.
but have some street party that's like,
yeah,
what
yeah,
do the Brazilians
yeah.
got? What do the Chinese got?
Yeah.
What do the Indians got? Bring it, music.
I do like
bring
I do a
culture,
festival.
You know?
I put on a festival called Brazilian Day.
You too.
It goes in January and it's pretty cool. We get the coach, you know, done heaps of gigs, and it's just try to educate for my radio show, try to educate people for music. But I find it like that. I mean, just to wrap up this. Political stuff, I think that they're not looking properly into the deep, you know, none of the policies are like kind of like, you know, you just kind of cut in and get because, ah, oh, this, you know, cut everything, you know, like, hey,
yeah.
wait, look at me. There's like hospitality needs some immigrants, you know, like farming needs some immigrants.
We need to sort out a good living wage though.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's kind of like, I think they need to look at properly, like deeper into it.
Yeah.
They just kind of like wanted to make a policy because everybody's talking about, oh, let's write something, you know, like, and I think it's a bit rushed.
Yeah.
Which you just need to kind of be looked at properly. Yeah, but yeah.
Another side of it, there's a bit of a bummer that someone said to me, I don't know how true this is that the right wing often want immigration for the reason that they want cheap labor. And in other words,
yeah.
what I'm saying to you is that
where we should be having a discussion about there being a living wage or a decent wage for everyone. Yeah. A few people have said to me it's like they just want a pool of cheap labour, which I find ethically really bad.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to come here, back to everything you said,
yeah.
you need enough money to actually get up and do those things you're talking about and build and build and build.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
no use. You know,
I mean, yeah.
Back in the day when I was young, like I say, about the families that came on out, and like the Indian family would own the dairy yeah. and the Chinese family would own the fruit shop and stuff, and the Greek family would own the fish and chip shop in Wellington.
Yeah.
The cost of living was such that you could actually save and do those things and buy houses,
yeah.
you know, and that's what's changed now is you come out as an immigrant, instead of often being able to start your own business,
yeah.
you end up working for a friggin' big petrol company at the station or at the warehouse or all the,
yeah.
you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the system is so deep in terms of what these changes.
Yeah. There's more opportunities, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so you're not going to tell me what Jacinda said at the bench? That's a good friend, Bobby. Good on you.
No,
I'm just saying she comes over and just sort of chills out and
I was about, don't know, when she first, that time was about the baby.
Yeah, I'm
then she came last time, she came, I think it was my partner's birthday.
Yeah.
And then she actually signed, she did the, I went to the labor office the other day because we were getting my Brazilian, my daughter's Brazilian passport. And she was going to, because, you know, can get like a, someone kind of like in that level to
who?
Sign up. The,
who, sorry?
Just seeing the kid next to sign all
like
the,
yeah,
sign,
yeah.
sign the photographs and yeah. you know, get her to do
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
I remember, yeah, that's when I last saw her, and I was going to Wellington to get my girl's passport. But I'm really, really confident now. You know, I think that's a good way to look at it. I am a New Zealand citizen since 2007, and I'm really proud of it. Never wanted to leave.
Yeah.
And then I wanted this to be, you know, this is my country. You know, this is also my country. This is also, you know, I'm an asset to this country. I'm like,
yeah.
I pay my taxes, but also like, I took New Zealand music to yeah, there's cool things
yeah,
that we can talk about.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I took New Zealand music to Brazil a few times.
Yeah.
I just started, like, I tried to do a record label. I bring Brazilian music over to New Zealand. Like, you know, there's no, I never made much money in out of that. But
no.
just because all I wanted was, I took, you know, last year I was also tour manager the Black Seeds in Brazil. And then I was so proud just to see my Brazilian people in, like, 800 people in a room.
I was going to ask you about that, Bobby. Is how do you get noise over there for such a small band in New Zealand? Like how do you approach a population that big and make sure you get crowds at a show?
That was just kind of luck. Like everything this way around. So I started doing these parties, you know, and start becoming big in promoting and putting on Brazilian events and stuff, and then I start kind of doing the other way around. Like, which is like, I actually just by luck, I went with Catch a Fire to Brazil to me and Polly, my friend Polly, who we decided to shoot a documentary out of our own pockets. Like, we just followed them around. It was the first New Zealand band to tour Brazil,
yeah, right.
So, we'd followed them around and then went to the tour bus and kind of went all over Brazil, and it was pretty cool. And then everybody singing along, all the Kiwi, you know, like, you know, it's just so famous, so big in Brazil. And I was in, we got a little documentary, came up of, they re-edit an album.
Yeah.
And they put as bonus, our documentary.
Oh, nice.
And it was about following them around. It was pretty cool.
But then, so how do you, like I said, back to that, even with Catchify, which you weren't involved with getting them big, who got them into the Brazilian market? And like, how did you get crowds for Black Seeds?
So everything was quite by luck. After that, I wanted to start a record label, and I took Lady Six. That was me taking, like, you know, trying to push my label in Brazil.
Yeah.
And I just had connections, you know, I had some people there, they're my friends, they like have blogs. But mainly it's just the internet, really.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just the internet grows so much that it's just no borders, you know, like people. They know about music. So many people know. It doesn't exist anymore. Like,
never
heard. No, everybody knows about, you know, and people that like reggae. So I think they.
So some Brazilian cats.
A lot of Catch a Fire online. Oh no, Catch a Fire was because a lot of Brazilians came over here and they from and they just in Australia and they're quite big in Aussie. So like they took to they just start taking back to Brazil.
You know where else they're really big that a lot of Kiwis don't know about? They're really big in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Catch a Fire. Because of that, there's a big, obviously big Polynesian population there.
Yeah,
but they do a lot of touring around that part of the States.
Funny story, I was talking to Dallas from Fat Freddy's.
Yeah.
And he said that he was in a taxi and they said about he was from a band in New Zealand. And he said, oh, do you know New Zealand band is like, you know, like Fat Freddy's, Catch a Fire. And he said, Catch a Fire is local. The taxi driver said they catch a fire was local.
In Hawaii.
They're real big. They're the most hardworking band.
They tour there a lot, yeah.
Yeah, they do. I don't know how they do it, like, you know, stay away for so long. But they our documentary that we did is actually talk about that. Talk about how...
Can I find it online or is that is it on Vimeo or something?
Yeah, it's on YouTube, I think.
Can you tell the listeners what's it called?
Just put Catch a Fire in Brazil.
I'm gonna watch that after you leave. I'm taking the rest of the day off anyway. That's all good.
It's real quick. It's only about 12 minutes or something, so it's pretty easy to watch.
So how many shows did Barnaby and the boys do in Brazil?
That was last year. There was about 5, but it was just luck, really. Because I mean, after I did the work with Lady and did the documentary with Catch a Fire. They approached me asking to manage them and to help out to put some gigs. So I did one gig together with a friend of mine in São Paulo.
Yeah.
But they actually were sent to Brazil by Vans.
Yeah, right. The shoe company. Weird.
Yeah, they were doing a 50th anniversary or something and they decided to fly the Black Seeds over to Brazil. So that was the main thing that took them there.
So this is the world we live in. So Vans in the US decide to fly a Kiwi band to Brazil for a shoe. Yeah. It's quite cold in here, right? I see you pulling that over.
No,
I'm going to put the heater on. Okay, that's all good. That sounds good. So just 5 shows again, sort of cultural liaison and stuff.
Yeah, no, just kind of, no, but yeah, it was quite true management, you know, like kind of first, my partner does that, Jazz, and so she was doing it. So I kind of tried to copy her, like, in a way. I was last, you know, kind of last person to go to sleep, first person to wake up. Just took as like the job, but like to, you know, kind of like, I'm gonna be tour manager now. Just dressed it, tour manager shirt.
And, yeah,
and
just hold all the shit down, basically.
Yeah, and then I was cool, you know, counting everybody in the van, everybody here, okay, so there's, you know, and also because you know, stressful. Knowing it was pretty easy. The boys are so lovely, you know. Those guys are just on my friends, you know, and just it's just easy to talk to them, and then they're hardworking people too. They just know the boundaries.
Oh, Barney's a great guy. Yeah. I imagine he leads a band leader, good life.
But yeah, just but seeing them. Brazilian people singing along, like, oh man, that was just hot, you know. It was just like, oh my people, you know what I mean. And the same way when I bring people here, I brought Jorge Bain here, you know, the guy that sings Masquerada.
Yeah,
and that was a peak, like, man, that was sold out Power Station, and it was.
Oh, that was your show. You promoted that.
Yeah, I promoted that. And the year before, I did one that I lost so much money, savings. I did a guy called Marcelo de Dois.
Oh no, what happened?
Because I was having a big run of like just being, I just used to put some Brazilian parties as a fire lounge with 700 people, 800 people, you know, like in one night.
Yeah.
And then this got this opportunity to bring, and that was quite big for me because I didn't know anything about
it. So going back to the fire lounge, so this happened ages ago, you lost heaps of money on a gig or just
it was
recently.
2009,
yeah.
So 2002, everything changed around the World Cup, as we were talking when the first started it. There was the World Cup in Japan. And we start putting these Brazilian parties, but there was no DJ. So I was there, I had to DJ, even though I was kind of embarrassed and I kind of shy. I just start DJing. And it was next door to Santos where I worked. So I start, you know. And then these parties went off. Brazil won the World Cup that year. And then I start putting in Brazilian parties. Yeah. And then I start bringing, and it was cool, I start bringing guys doing gigs with like bands and different bands for Brazilian flavors. Like they were starting like Batucada Sound Machine and $1 million.
Yeah,
you know? And then with DJs like Nick D and Roger Perry and Chris Cox. Yeah. So this time, that was quite cool. And then there was the old 420.
Yeah.
And then after I started getting asked to do gigs at Kuja and then asked to do gigs at Galatos, which started, and then my career DJ started getting bigger and then got asked to do a radio show in George. But then I thought that was, that was me. Oh, yeah, sweet ass. I can do this gig. I can do bring this guy. He's amazing. Big in Brazil.
The promoter's dilemma.
Yeah, then I was like, put in this gig, put the Power Station, put all my savings, you know, like off coffee making, you know, of 9 years. And then I was like,
coffee making for 9 years.
Power Station fits 1,100 people, and then I had 250.
Oh.
You know, there was the worst about it is that when you go and everybody goes, you just kind of like, swallowing like going, oh fuck, and just kind of like thinking, and then like everybody tapping your shoulder and go, oh, that was great, man. Even there wasn't that many people, there was a good vibe,
you know?
But then it was like everybody going, oh, that was dope, Bobby. They're like, hey, me, bro, sweet ass. And then you look at it and go, man, it's like the band made money, the rapper made money, the venue made money, the bouncer made money, the dog girl made money, you know. And then you're the one that going, oh shit. But then I have a business partner that does his parties with me, you know, the Brazilian guy that's got a big network of,
yeah.
And then we look at each other and we're like, fuck, man, we, you know, are we going to pay this? Then, because the bills start coming after, you know, College Hill comes with this big,
yeah,
you know? And I say, look, man, just looking into investing the money in ourselves, you know, we didn't lose it, you know?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, it's shit that it happened, Bobby, but at least it happened at that level and you didn't end up going to some level where it was like, oh, yeah. Victor Arena.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Back to Brazil.
Yeah, it was just a swap. Then you just kind of, it's just weird when you do that game, because I actually love it, the risk.
Oh, totally. No, I've always, because I've had a bit to do with, I've worked for promoters over the years, you know, and I've had a bit to do with different parts of events and parties.
Yeah.
And I've always thought, it's such a skillful thing to pull off and blah, 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 blah. But you just kind of said, I like the risk and stuff. It is kind of a form of gambling in a way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, will it rain on the night? Will this happen? Yeah. Will that happen? Will blah, 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 blah.
And then that's kind of like motivates you, but so excites you. And then you kind of like, you know, and then you, if you win, you're just so stoked. And then you just kind of, you know,
I look at people like, so this is to do not just the business side, but actually just pulling this stuff off, bro. And I know you know him because I met Jazz at his birthday. Like looking at someone like Elmo in Rhythm and Alps, or like when I used to go to Big Day Outs.
Yeah.
So just looking at these things and going, man, these are pretty amazing things to pull off when there's sort of one person at the top of it all pulling the strings.
Brain.
That's a lot of stress and a lot of organizing
and
a lot of, because it all, for someone like that, where everything, one day or 3 days or whatever, the whole year hangs on it.
No, yeah. That's, and then when it comes closer and closer again, more and more.
That's why I'm always really, I make a point of, if I know the promoter or whatever, just saying that was awesome. That was amazing for all these reasons.
Yeah, no, it's real nice.
You know, because it's like,
when you got recognition, you know. Like, yeah. So the best thing to add, the year after.
Because Alex is doing it because he loves music. He's also trying to do a business, but he's doing it,
well,
you know.
You gotta get paid for your time, you know, your time. And you know what I mean? It's not being like, you know.
Charity.
But, you know, it's quite, but then I did, the year after, I did Jorge Ben, which is this guy that, you know, Masquina, and then, you know, he wrote that song.
Maybe not with you singing of course I do.
And he's massive, you know, in Brazil, he just, you know, he's in the world, you know, worldwide, he's famous.
It was the Santos ad for Bass FM, bro.
For a little bit, yeah. I mean, and I decided I was going, like, I'm going to take this, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to put this, I got a bank loan, and I'm like, nah, man, I gotta do this. I know this is gonna be good. I trust it, and I just like, I got my room, my old George Ben records, and I put it into a mixtape, and then I made a flyer for the event as a tape, and I had a Santos with me, a conch, so I put it in a conch pile. I had this pile with me all the time. I made 1,000 or 500 of them or something. I can't remember.
Every coffee.
And every coffee I'll give it up. And then the first song was Masquinada. So you don't know the name, but you know the song. You know the, and then I sold out Power Station. 11.
Oh, I get it. You were giving away a mix with the flyer. Like a burnt CD or whatever.
Yeah, but see, in the cover, it was just white. In the cover, it was like Jorge Ben, Power Station, May 25th.
Oh, good, nice way to do it.
Yeah, and then I gave it to people, put it in their car, and then you listen also.
Yeah.
And then, I sold out. And then I had a review on a paper on the back page of the New Zealand Herald about the gig, written by, it comes to Conch, I forgot his name now.
Is he a known writer, like a known...
For music, yeah.
Don't know.
Tall guy.
Oh. Anyway.
He wrote my name and said, thanks Bob Brazuca for making it happen. And I was like, man, I got my name. It's like sometimes, you know, how the promoter gets their name. And then I think I was just so great because I don't... dig people, the promoters getting the names, you know, because it's more about the artists.
The recognition.
But recognition from, you know, I was just like, oh man, this is so dope. Like, you know, I was just kind of believe it.
The Santos guys were, the whole point of that CAF is they're Brazilian as well, right? The dudes that owned it.
Yeah, yeah.
What's happened to them, Bobby?
Marcelo is Chona, then he sold it to his ex-wife, Anne.
Yeah.
Marcelo now lives in Bondi. Anne lives in Kumeru, like she works.
Is he doing the cafe buzz does, over there? Or?
Nah, he started bringing Jandals. He's got
Havianas, another. Havianas, I'm guessing?
Nah, it's like a cop. No, it's like a copy of it.
Oh,
it's called Amazonas or something.
Mavianas.
Yeah, it's like a sustainable one, kind of recycled. He's doing good. He's happy and he's a bit much older now, surfs every day, still got, you know.
Nice.
Great dude. Yeah, and then life went by, man. And
so how many Brazilian, how many, what's, how big is the Brazilian community in Auckland and New Zealand now?
They say there's about around 8,000 in Auckland.
Yeah.
And then in Queenstown, there's 15% of the population. Queenstown is Brazilian.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
You go to Texas and there's Brazilian.
Residents here or working holidays?
No, residents down there.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Which is like, give you like, it's incredible. Like, you know, you go to the little town like that and then go to McDonald's, it's like this, you can't order Portuguese.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Because I was thinking before, a few points before you were talking about, I didn't drop this thought in. You were just talking about immigrants in general having a, you know, coming over here and making the most of it. Like, you know, they used to call America the land of opportunity, but
yeah.
I know we're in the corner of the planet, but it looks a bit more like the land of opportunity now here.
Yeah,
you know.
I don't dig a lot of New Zealand. A lot of Brazilians. Some of my friends, they might not like if they listen to this, but I hate when people just use, a lot of them just get their passports and just
fuck off to Aussie.
Fuck off to Aussie.
Yeah, then, yeah.
I mean, it's just because I'm such a New Zealand lover, like, yeah, that I can't, I will never, you know.
That's where we need to sort out things like our wage issue, Bobby, because like I was doing this sort of work you're talking about when I moved to Melbourne, right? I was glassying, I was making coffee. I was doing work that wage-wise was less than I was doing when I left New Zealand, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I was earning more money. I had disposable income, good disposable income, as a hospo worker in Melbourne.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and that was 2001, 2002. So I sort of get why it happens. Like, if you're just trying, if it's just, you know, trying to have enough money each week, you can sort of see why they do it. Yeah. I don't know. I'm maybe justifying that, but I get what you're saying. Yeah.
I think that, I guess it's just so small, and that's the problem. And that's all the immigration things.
Well, that's immigration. More people equals more economy, more wages.
Think, you know, if I was prime minister, I would probably try to, you know, get put a university, maybe in or maybe like, you know, some apart, like in somewhere like the Hawke's Bay, which is always sunny and beautiful, and then you know, just attract people to go live over there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe Nelson.
Yeah,
you know, like something to do, something maybe in a New Plymouth, like, yeah, kind of like make those areas they're more like kind of more livable.
Have you ever been to Palmerston North? Because you just made me think, oh, that's the reason I wouldn't go to Massey. It's because you're in Palmerston North. But the Hawke's Bay, if there was New Plymouth or somewhere like that, those places that are real nice sunny spots.
You know, there's stuff like, you know, I'm a lefty, you know, but like I just think that, like, for example, when they wanted to oil drilling, that was an idea that I had. Some people didn't get it, like, you know, like oil drilling in New Zealand. And I was like they got Petrobras, which is the Brazilian oil company.
They're here.
Oh, they're supposed to come, and they were, New Zealand was so tough on the people not so anti it, that they got out. And it was quite good. And then some, what's the name of the other one? American one. Marco or something.
We're both forgetting stuff now. I know the one you mean, the really huge one.
Yeah, anyhow, they wanted to come. And then I was like, okay, what about if you go somewhere like, you know, they wanted to go in the coast, in the east coast of Gisborne kind of thing. And I said, what about if you just go to some people like that? And then, like, I mean, the whole world is doing oil, you know.
Yeah,
then there's the part here that we couldn't make much more, bring a lot of money to the country kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so say, so someone, I say, look, you can come over here and do oil drilling in our coast, but then you're going to be here for 5 years.
No,
yeah. And then
so you, regulate the hell out of it.
And then your people are going to, you're going to bring some people, going to teach our people how to do it. After the 5 years, you leave and we do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So then the Kiwis, and then we put an university in Gisborne. And then the university will come with a supermarket, and then it'll come with a little shop, it'll come with a cafe, then more business come to. And then the city will grow a little bit more. We'll not just live out of ribbon vines, you know what I mean? It's just, you know what I mean? Like, you know, so the whole, you know, we're booming a little other center. Yeah. I mean, guess kind of like what they did kind of in Perth, like, you know, the kind of mining, I mean, you know, which kind of gave a big boost to Australia. Okay.
I know, because your original point there, I get what you were saying, in that you're saying you're a lefty, but you've got quite pragmatic concerns when it comes to prosperity and everyone. Yeah.
I mean, you know, like, I mean, I
but
quite
the
like
the problem with that idea now is with the oil thing is like, I think we've got to move sustainable and stuff. Yeah, now. See, all this stuff to think about.
Yeah, and no, it's such a tough country. I mean,
solar power. Let's have the solar people over here and teach us.
Yeah, you know, it's such a, can, or something like that, you know.
Just, I get the sentiment of what you're saying.
It doesn't need to be oil, you know, but I like, I kind of start reading a little bit of the guy Macron, like the French prime minister, president, Macron, is what I said, I think, and he's, he was the minister of economy of France, and then he kind of decided to make his own buzz.
Yeah,
and then he's kind of like that kind of way of like being to the people, but also kind of like he's an economist in his background, so he kind of think in a way that bring money in. And I mean, I guess that's what we need in New Zealand, something that can boom it, like in some sort, you know, take if you do something like that, for example, you can take cows. You cannot be the big farming, and then you can clean our rivers. You know what I mean? Yeah. Something like that's what we say. You know, we don't need to go and damage our nature, our beautiful country. But then something somewhere, someone can think about it. And, you know,
well,
like
just keep in Jacinda's ear, Bobby. Just keep in Jacinda's ear. Just throw those little ideas.
You know, you don't have to like you don't have to go and sell our mines to 50% of our when they sold the assets. You know, kind of like that. I mean, there's something that can be done that can, you know, and then I think that we could boom a little bit of the economy. That's what we need. And then once you get that done, then, I mean, everything kind of, you know, people get, I think the wages need to be higher, things. And
we got a few minutes left, Bobby. Creative projects and stuff. Do you want to talk a bit about Latin Altidore?
Another, going back to those proud moments of these 18 years. One good thing is that next year I'm turning 40.
Yeah, I just did that.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Thanks. It was a while ago, but
I got my birthday party on 24th of July. I was DJing last night at Possible Social Club in my residency for 9 years.
Yeah.
I've been every Thursday.
Yeah.
And it's my birthday is on the 24th of July. And I was like, oh, it's my last year in my 30s, you know. So I messaged DJ Spell while I was DJing and said, bro, I wanted to fly you up for my birthday. Can you play here in my bar? And he said, yep, sweet as.
Next year for your 40th.
No, here now. In a couple of weeks. Yeah. You come.
Yeah. Hang on, 29th of July. That's
24th of August.
You just said July. Yeah, what am I dreaming? What is he telling me?
24th of August.
24th of August.
It's a couple of weeks. Yeah.
I'd really like to have Spell on my podcast, Bobby. He seems a pretty interesting
dude.
Man,
he'll be, you could
just
maybe,
even aside from the musical talent,
he's funny.
His comic timing. Have you just seen the stuff where he like just... telling my bro about it the other day. There's a guy at work who doesn't really understand turntablism and stuff.
Yeah.
So I showed him that video because I knew he'd like it that's amazing with all the comedy stuff as well. Yeah. But then I was telling him about, you know how he just like Spell will like log on to Facebook Live like 2 p.m. on Tuesday and just talk, just make jokes and play and you look at it and he's got like 1,000 people watching.
And worldwide as well. And then he did that.
What's
incredible.
His real name? Can you remember?
I know, I just got his, I just actually got like a form that I have to fill as a promoter.
Okay.
And then his name is there, but Tuturu is spelled, this is on Facebook. I just loved it. I found it incredible in his comedy, like, you know, his sense of humor is just so good. Like.
And did you see the one the other day where he just like showed his other complete musical talent where he started off with a loop of the... There was a loop of some samples, and then he played some keys, and then he sung, and then he had this monster funk jam going with the, you know, that thing you put in your mouth?
Yeah.
The Roger Troutman thing? Oh, so he's amazing.
He's so good. But, yeah, I was just kind of, next year is my 40th. This year is 39.
Yeah.
Next year is going to be 2020, so 20 years in Brazil.
But I think, and good on you, I think the promoter you was saying, everyone come to Ponsonby Social Club for end of July for Spell.
End of August,
so.
But, and then the best, one of the, no, my biggest proud moment is that when I put, I met up with this girl called Jennifer Zia, which is part of Latino Tarua, and then we started this thing, just me DJing, she's singing, and I just do like instrumentals and, you know, then we start kind of going to explore and doing things around town, and then...
Isaac jumped in for a while, I
wanted to put the percussion, and then my Isaac went to Europe once, and then just as buzzing, like, just, they were... he was there in Europe, and Jennifer was going to Europe, so I decided to go to Europe. We meet him there and do some gigs. And then we're just people playing other people's music, you know? Then we decided, because Isaac is some amazing producer, we'd start doing stuff. And that's when I started, like, a production, but I was never into it, like... But I'm real lazy, you know? I don't actually... I just kind of sit down. I sit down next to him and just sample stuff out of my old records, my Brazilian Latin records, and give references of stuff that I wanted, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, some stuff, some house stuff that I'll go back to, like, kind of masters at work, you know?
Yeah.
Kenny Dope, Louis Vega, stuff that I like to make, you know?
I love that shit.
Or maybe a little bit. And we did a whole album. And then we decided to play our own music. So we did an album, which is... And then I learned so much with Isaac. Like, it was just like... the process of it, I didn't know anything. And then it just was amazing. And he's... we got nominated for New Zealand Music Award for the album. And
what year?
2013. Nice. And then we were going Best Roots Album against Fat Freddy's. we lost it, but
But hey, just you were nominated. At
table,
you were nominated by a bunch. Those judges are like the heads of New Zealand music.
I just like to, you know, wrapping this up. Like, I just love my culture, and I love this culture, and it's both my, you know.
But this is
my
your culture too, now, Bobby.
You know?
Yeah,
both for them, you know. Just like I put my heart into things, you know. Sometimes I go out there. Sometimes I can be expressly wrong, or if I was rude. I mean, sometimes I just think that, you know, my mind goes so. It's just work. It's kind of like
I don't think I've ever known you to be rude once. You're pretty welcoming kind of a dude, man.
You know, sometimes, you know, like, my mind doesn't go as fast as Nick D's, you know? Like, I get Nick, you know, but goes in a way that sometimes I just forget things, you know? But I love the way that I was sitting at the table there, and I put Latin music in the top with all the other coaches on New Zealand music. And so I love New Zealand music. Yeah. I live this. I know I was there when Scribe and P Money and, you know, Fat Freddy's, all this, you know. And I know, I study the background of different things, listen to people such as, you know, all the guys, Simon and Sid.
You know, the heritage. Peter,
you know, and I'm friend, you know. And just, I know the hope, for me, it was when I put Latin music up in the top of the, you know, in the New Zealand music scene. I felt in a way that was like, hey, look, we can't be Latin, New Zealand Latin music, because there was no New Zealand reggae before, you know?
No.
And that's where the Herbs started, you know?
Yeah.
And so then I kind of understand the whole process of it, and I was like, man, this is cool. One day, you know, maybe I'm putting a little... You know, a little bean there and then something,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, little seat. We're gonna end now because you got to get going to sound check.
Yeah.
And I decided it is quite cold here and I need to get the heater on.
Nah,
but awesome,
so much.
Bro. I've learned a lot about you, like I do of all my guests.
That was fun.
Thanks, man.
It was a real nice corridor. Thanks so much.
Cheers.
Man.
Su manera de andar, como ella de cuidar.